Welcome to the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to today's episode of the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech. Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech delivers a look into the world of manufacturing. We're going to talk about stories and trends that lead to better solutions. We've got guests sharing some tips and outcomes to improve your productivity. I'm your host, Dave McKenna from Grantech, our smart packaging solution leader. And today I'm joined by Emily Cook. Emily Cook is a director of product at Apprentice.io. It's a leading technology company to help life sciences companies get life-saving drugs to market faster by connecting global workforces and scaling complex manufacturing. Over her 10-year experience in life science, she spent time in R&D on biometric devices at Draper Laboratory, developed Syncade solutions for 260-plus customer issues, founded new user-driven product development approaches, and made strategies for next-generation pharma solutions at Emerson and now at Apprentice.io. She recently won Manufacturing Institute's Step Ahead Emerging Leader Award for 2021 and for all of her efforts. So thank you, Emily, for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm excited to be here.
So I'm just curious, how did you go from life science to a little more on the tech side of life science, and yeah, how did you get into that area of it?
I feel like it's the classic story. Now I knew someone. So I went to school for chemical engineering, and that's when I was working in the lab at Draper Laboratories, working on biomimetic devices, so working with polymers and running experiments, and I loved all that. I actually thought I wanted to go into material science, and I had two different options. I'm a have plan A through Z kind of person, so I was already ready to go to get my master's in material science or get a job. I ended up going the get a job path and met somebody that I actually worked with at Draper, who worked for Emerson, mm-hmm. and they were working on Syncade MES there. And I was like, oh, well, it's software in the biopharma manufacturing space. I studied manufacturing for chemical engineering. Like, that's kind of cool. So it was really luck. And I'm really, really thankful that happened, because I absolutely love software, and I feel like it's my sweet spot in the middle of a Venn diagram of my artsy kind of side of how my brain works and the engineering manufacturing side of how that works. It's like right in the nice little sweet spot where I get to create every day. Product management is just naturally kind of an art and a science. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool. And I work in a cool industry.
Well, it's funny how some of these chance encounters or kind of people you meet. I mean, some people plan stuff out for their careers and follow that trajectory. Most of the rest of us, it's, yeah, where'd you start and who'd you meet? And hey, this is a nice opportunity. It's interesting that, so you actually know what you're talking about from a chemical side and from the doing of the pharmacy, of the life sciences. Like, you could go do it. You could go in the lab and do a life science. So yeah. I assume that really helps on the software side, because you actually know what this stuff is trying to do.
Yes. I think that's probably the only reason they gave me a chance. Because, all right, like, maybe we can teach her the technical software stuff, because at least she knows the chemical stuff, which we don't know, and, you know,
yep. What's that? Oh, domain knowledge. Awesome. Well, thank you. That's a good, that's an interesting story to see how you got into it. Before we get into kind of some of the questions, there's anything, any upcoming exciting activities or events that you want to mention or bring up?
Yeah, so we are actually having our inaugural user group conference in February. So first time we're doing a user conference for Apprentice, which is really exciting. I've been a part of them in the past at Emerson, and love going to the Pharma MES conferences every year. So it'll be good. It'll be exciting.
I mean, especially from a product management standpoint, that's exciting to have everybody in person, and they'll tell you the real thing after you ply them with a drink or two, perhaps. Uh-huh. Or maybe they'll be forthcoming anyways, but to have everybody in person, that's an incredible opportunity. So mm-hmm. excellent. So I think look for if you're interested in apprenticing, or does anyone make that bad joke at Apprentice? The first one. No.
You know, I don't actually know if anybody has made that joke.
No.
Me.
I don't know if that's people who want to work at Apprentice or Apprentice.
Although
work at Apprentice,
we do,
or customers.
It's funny, we do when we've had job listings before, cover letters are really interesting, where people, if they've come in through like a recruiter, they don't realize that Apprentice is the name of the company, and they're like, well, I don't want to be an apprentice. I'm applying for this job. And it's just, that part's funny.
Step one in applying, learn name of company.
Learn the name of the company.
Yes. Step two, try more. Okay. Well, yeah, we're getting a bit wacky here, but look for that conference if you want to know more about Apprentice and or you're a user. That sounds like an exciting opportunity. We are going to ask kind of the question that we ask lots of people at the beginning of this. What does Industry 4.0 mean to you without any AI assistance or Wikipedia? Or what's your personal definition? How do you carry it around? What do you gets used and thrown around by many people in many different ways for a million different things. What's your take on Industry 4.0?
Yeah, so I feel bad, but I kind of hate the term. I've been around the manufacturing software industry for so long that after hearing it for 10 plus years, it's just, you know, buzzword exhaustion at this point. But
and you were doing it before it was cool anyways.
I guess.
Under different names.
I don't know. It's not really cool to me anymore.
We tell ourselves this on the podcast too.
Right. Yeah. No, but it in all seriousness, I don't know if this is just my product management brain, but I tend to use it now more as a mechanism to shift the conversation into what I think we should actually be talking about. So what problems do we want to solve? And let's not reinvent just to reinvent, but let's reinvent to solve a problem and add value. So if a customer comes to me and they're like, I want to speed up tech transfer. All right, let's dive into how to do that. And if there's elements of Industry 4.0 that solve that, awesome. Let's go forward and do that. But I guess to me, it's the umbrella term is not the important part. It's what you're going to leverage that to do, what conversations you're going to have, what
you can actually do.
What's the project plan for Industry 4.0? How do you turn it from just a presentation into actual reality and implementing it with your teams?
Excellent. I would challenge you to keep the buzzword part if you need to get money sometimes or something. Sometimes high up people have to have where I see value in buzzwords. If it's somebody at a director, a senior director has to have an Industry 4.0 strategy, get me quantity one quick. But love your take on let's actually do something and let's make this real, not just talk about
The first slide and then get to the good stuff.
Yeah, first slide. It's good for a first slide though. Excellent. So I'm going to ask you, I'm going to use some artificial intelligence to improve the quality of my presentation. And we do a riddle to ice break. What English word has three consecutive double letters? I don't know that you needed artificial. Well, that's more scripting. Would have got that one without AI. But any guess?
I know.
This is why they invented computers to solve
problems. I know, right?
Yeah. Bookkeeper. I'm not impressed with the AI though. This one wasn't that clever. It was more just grounded out.
Yeah.
Moving back to
algorithm maybe to find that.
Yeah. That's legacy systems could have come up with that one. Let's go back to again Industry 4.0.
Yeah.
Apprentice. How does your plan? I'm not an expert on Apprentice, so I am, and I've seen a few MES systems in my day and other things that do elements of that and point solutions. So Apprentice, how does Apprentice impact digitalization? Digitalization is the big one of the biggest pieces of Industry 4.0. It is something that there's a chunk of it that's been done, but now it's that kind of last mile of paper and labels and manual processes. How does Apprentice impact that?
Yeah. So this is probably gonna be my longest response to a question, because this is where I get really passionate. So there's two elements that I try to drive at Apprentice, and luckily, given how our product is set up, it's really easy to do that. And it's digitalization through people, and then a different perspective. So like my two P's. And with people, Apprentice started years ago with trying to provide operators on the manufacturing floor a hands-free execution device. Okay. And a way to talk to their remote subject matter experts, all while COVID was going on. And it was literally the CEO and our one of our co-founders just seeing this problem where they didn't have access to who they needed to talk to. Only essential personnel are on site, right? So how do you address that? So that's kind of why I go back to that. Well, let's just talk about the problem we want to solve. Industry 4.0 is the answer. What's the roadmap to get there? In this particular instance, it was RealWear hands-free headset devices that could connect into teleconferencing, which is Tandem, our Tandem product. And then that evolved into our first version of our MES solution where, okay, can I just talk to my headset and go through my MES workflow? And so compounding on providing the operator with a really unique experience for them, solving a specific problem for them. So with that, it's around a specific persona. Mm-hmm. And I harp on this because I view in product management, I have this diagram that I use to try to articulate this, where imagine you have three concentric circles and you're going to plot your personas of your product within those concentric circles. And the centermost is the user that is always in your system. They use it daily. They depend on it daily. They are getting the most value out of it. If you look at a given roadmap for that product, most of the features are probably aimed towards those users. And I did an experiment when I first joined Apprentice to try to say, okay, like how do we need to like innovate in this space? Let's do this persona thing. And I, looking at traditional and legacy MES providers, the center of that circle, operators were in there. But then it was flooded with your MES admin, your IT admin, your system implementer engineer, your programmer, your all of these things that they're not manufacturing personnel. They're not people who know the product, or product as in like the pharma product. They don't know that well. They don't know the manufacturing process well or the chemistry well. But they're the ones that are digitalizing everything. So at Apprentice, one of the things that we're trying to drive is shifting that concentric circle model such that the users that are in the center are your manufacturing personnel, your quality managers, your operators, your process scientists, your MSAT engineers, like the people who actually know the pharmaceutical product and process, so that in theory, when we're going through this digitalization journey, they're not only just digitalizing to digitalize, they're optimizing their process around the science.
And you're building it. So you're building it for the people who manufacture, which is the whole point of this anyways. You're not building it for the people who install it.
Yeah.
I mean, you need to think about that maybe a little bit.
You need to think about them. They're still in that diagram. Yeah. But do they really need to be the center?
Some of that's always the challenge of who buys this versus who uses it, because your operators aren't buying it. But then they get forgotten about sometimes by people who buy it, and they have their own KPIs and their own elements. But no, that's excellent to hear a real operator. And those are the people that the whole point of all this. So Okay.
And then the second part of that is like driving a different perspective. So you had the people side of it, like who are we targeting? And then for the perspective of digitalization, I kind of constantly see this, let's digitalize your whole plant, which is great. Like, yes, awesome goal. And I love the BioForum digital plant maturity model. I don't know if are you familiar with that?
I'm between BioForum plant maturity models right now. But...
Okay. but I like those models because they at least paint a journey and a path to a certain extent, but it can be really overwhelming and really daunting for the goal to be digitalize your entire plant.
Sure.
And so I think it also has ended up in potentially, like, I've seen vendors water down their features and their solutions for customers, just trying to target, ooh, I want to be the level 5 adaptive plant vendor, versus, okay, what's the journey to get a customer there? What are the problems we're trying to solve? So one of the things we're trying, and it might fail epically, I don't know, is thinking about digitalization in 3 different dimensions. So you have your activity dimension, where anything you do on the manufacturing floor is just an activity. It doesn't matter if it was in an MES or an LES or a CMMS or any of the acronyms out there. An activity is an activity, and you can digitalize it. So if somebody wants to start in just digitalizing weigh and dispense activities, go for it. That's a first step in activity maturity. And then the next one is your product or portfolio maturity. So maybe you are ready to pull together an entire batch record for one therapy. Awesome. You can do that. And then the next goal would be digitalize the next product. And then the third dimension is more of your network maturity effect. So let's say they did that digitalize, weigh, and dispense, and they did it for one team. Maybe the next goal is not digitalizing all of your activities. Maybe it's just, let's spin up another team that's doing these weigh and dispense activities. So now we have 2 teams that are kind of working in tandem. They're digitalizing, they're seeing value, and then you spin up another team and another site doing that. And so none of these 3 dimensions are necessarily better than the other. They all have different value depending on what the biomanufacturer's situation is. And all are important to grow in those 3 dimensions.
And so you're trying to build that flexibility in where you can go, you don't have to go whole plant, you don't have to go all batch records at the same time for all products. You can pick and choose as your business, as the best fits your business and your budget and your timeline and your internal project management capacity and the other million things that throttle this kind of stuff being done or accelerated.
Yep. And it gives you like a way to identify what your steps might look like. Along the way. So if the goal is to digitalize your entire plant, okay, there's a lot of pathways we can go to that. And the first step is not digitalize all batch records for all products and all this, because that's going to be an 18-month product or project and you're going to hate it.
Like, sure. And just tell all the operators to go home for 6 months while we figure this out and convert everything over and then come back, right? And which the different, very different than like an ERP rollout kind of ERP or bust kind of thing, where this is and those, I could see those providing as the flexibility and that people focus kind of opening up more choice. Do you find challenges guiding customers through that, because there is so much more choice on all this? Where do I go, or how do I track where I'm going, or what are the choices on path A versus B versus A and then over to C? But we could go here too. Does it make managing customers more and their journey more complicated?
Definitely, definitely. So there's more ownership put on us, but that means instead of becoming so the reverse of this is you get a URS from a customer and it's digitalized all your batch records, right? And then the vendor really just becomes glorified product management or project management, excuse me.
Yep.
In this instance, we are forced to take on more of an industry consultative role where we're saying, hey, like given your situation, this probably makes the most sense to maximize value. So it requires more work on our end and more work specifically in building up that relationship and more upfront discovery work of what problems we want to help the customer solve. But we've also seen it result in higher value.
Well, yeah, because you know them better and you have the tools to tailor. Is it hard to know where to start on all this? Is that one of the...
Oh, yeah. Okay. That's...
that was the knowing. That was a load. That was a very heavy... that's not the right word, but there was a lot packed into that. Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because it depends on too where the customer is. So like we've had folks come to us who don't even have a manufacturing site built yet. So
might be a bit early.
Right. But it's not necessarily early because they might have the product definition already. So we can start digitalizing. We may not know what specific equipment you're going to use, but that's what parameterization is for. So we've had to kind of flip the script of saying, yeah, you don't have to have all of these specific rigid details to get going.
Okay.
And that's also kind of the cool part about working in the tech space is there's a lot of parallels that we can apply. So there's agile sprint methodology, right? You don't build the entire product in a major release. You figure out what consumable little biteable chunks you can chew. You know, mm-hmm. Eat the whole elephant in one bite. What's the phrase?
Viable. Oh, I don't. I can't think of elephant quotes, but yeah, you eat an elephant a piece at a time. That's really
something like that. Yeah.
Okay, but yeah, more requirement, better knowing your customer, more interaction.
Yeah, more and more questions up front to really understand what their goal is. So, did somebody higher up say, we have an Industry 4.0 project, go do some prototypes? That's a whole different problem statement versus we've had some customers that their operators kept getting into states where they were causing deviations. So their main goal was, these are really high stakes part of our manufacturing. Let's digitalize that and put the guardrails in place to minimize deviations. That's a really simple place to start. And then it's expanded from there to full batch records. They're manufacturing the full product and the full manufacturing line. Like, so it's different depending on the trigger for the project.
So is that kind of something like, is that something that differentiates this in a sense that it can be this point mez thing or a giant 15 multi-site? Can I go big on this? Or
yes, that is with our 7.0 release. This is the first, at least I've seen in the marketplace, of a true enterprise networking level MES system where I can have as many sites as I want, as many teams as I want. They're all working in the same actual MES product that is completely connected. And one big thing is you can have an actual digital center of excellence. So in those scenarios we were talking about of, maybe you've digitalized weigh and dispense at one site and now you're ready to expand to multiple sites. Maybe you figured out the most optimal way to do that. you define that master data in your center of excellence suite, and you can literally with one click publish it out to all of your sites.
And they're all, I guess that's if you're not connecting to equipment, or if you are connecting to equipment, you'd still have to do that kind of groundwork and OEM programming and integration piece. But if it from an application standpoint, you can just publish, right click share, way and dispense and process.
If you have already parameterized that, let's say way and dispense recipe, for example, and you have just a placeholder in for your equipment, when you publish that out to the team, that placeholder is already there. They don't have to modify anything. Just at runtime, all of their parameter values, they can apply real quick, and it's done.
Okay.
Yep.
One mes to rule them all.
Yes.
One platform.
Very Lord of the Rings.
Just don't throw it into the volcano. What industry that you think you rarely work with that would benefit from Apprentice? Is this all big companies? Is it small companies? Is it only? I'll ask for the benefit of our listeners. Is this only life sciences? Can I do this in my aerospace manufacturing? Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so right now we're optimized and focused in life sciences.
Okay.
That could definitely change in the future. I mean, if you look under the hood at MES products, again, an activity on the floor is just an activity with a workflow, materials, equipment, and people. So you can kind of apply it wherever you're manufacturing with those things. So, but yeah, we're focused in life sciences right now. And for the first part of your question, who could really benefit that we don't necessarily see a lot? That was actually one of the reasons I was really excited to join Apprentice. So I've seen over the years, most of the time, big MES projects are focused on selling to and being implemented in large commercial facilities and very big pharma sexy logos. So your Pfizer's, your Bristol Myers Squibbs, like, yeah, great. But what always kind of didn't sit right with me is, well, we have a lot of mom and pop style pharma companies or smaller sites. Maybe they're only one, maybe they have one site. Maybe it's only on one floor of a building. Like the first time I visited a cell and gene therapy site, it was one building. And the whole manufacturing floor, the whole floor was just on one floor.
Wow.
And it looked more
you never think of pharma manufacturing as any, and
yeah.
I guess says more about me maybe than pharma manufacturing, so I shouldn't say it, but you always think of these jumbo plants where you drive up to it and there's a huge parking lot.
Yeah, and you have to have a golf cart.
Go through the campus. Yeah. But exactly. Okay, so there's a lot of these small companies.
Mm-hmm.
Potentially scaling or seeking to scale, and they were underserved by the software manufacturing market.
Mm-hmm. Because it's more when you look at those manufacturing suites, they look closer to your organic chemistry lab setup in university.
Okay,
like it's benchtop scale things. They're working in hoods, and you know, it also applies not just to cell and gene therapy, but before a drug is fully commercialized and hits those giant facilities, there was some preclinical team somewhere or process development team somewhere that optimized how to produce that in the best way possible. And there was a clinical team somewhere that did manufacturing for clinical trials. It may not be in the giant line, but they need an MES. They could benefit from digitalizing. But the interesting part is in those scenarios, so in either small batch or like lab scale or in process development, when you're having to make a lot of changes on the fly, you need flexibility. So it's no longer this locked and loaded recipe that cannot change and results in all these exceptions and deviations. Like That's not the point. In a process development scenario, their goal is to optimize, which means they're going to change things left and right. So there's a lot of things that we've designed at Apprentice for those scenarios. Like there's one thing that's really fun to literally watch. On our iOS device, we have this thing called in-suite authoring. So okay. You can start authoring a recipe. You might be at your desk and doing your thing. Then you take our iPad and go into the suite. You have your headset on, you're working in the hood, and it's essentially the equivalent of writing on a post-it. Oh, I would need to add this step. Oh, I need to change this. Oh, so the range of this spec actually might need to be adjusted here. Instead of doing that on paper or going back to your desk, typing it down, we can let you author and suggest those changes right on the device, and then automatically goes into the recipe. And so then
over my headset while I'm
we have our RealWear headsets that connect to our iOS iPad devices.
Wow.
So yeah, you can talk to the device, and most of the time operators, it's a mixed bag. Either the operators absolutely love using the headset, or they're like, oh no, I must have my device. So we have both. But it's just really cool to see, going back to what like we first talked about, the people who actually know the process digitalizing it as they're actually doing
wow.
the work.
And giving them the tools.
Yeah.
As they do
the
job.
In context.
Mm-hmm. As they go. Wow, that's and lightweight and I'm gonna say affordable for your sub 6 building company that also needs to do things properly and faster and track their workflows and
yeah.
record all this.
Yeah. Amazing. They don't want to build a huge server room that they have to maintain and hire a whole IT force to manage. That's not realistic.
Oh, great. I got one question from a previous guest, and mm-hmm. and then you get to return the favor to another guest. This question, we're getting a little spiritual, I guess, on this one, but what is the role of a higher power in your decision making? Maybe let's say higher power, meaning a higher authority in the company or higher authority in the customer.
Yeah,
or if you have a better interpretation of higher power, please proceed, because that's the best one.
So it is actually timely for me, because at Apprentice we move very fast. We still have startup mentality, small team, so we're always under pressure, as I'm sure most working professionals are, but performance pressure, competitive pressure, time pressure, everything. And I feel like that's when your true colors show. And that's been where I've been thinking more and more lately, as I make decisions, whether it's in the product or trying to guide my team on what we should do or what we should propose. How do I balance the right thing to do with making people happy? And, you know, like how do I do this? And I am a Christian, and it's been interesting trying to figure out what does it look like to be a godly woman in a really fast paced software company. And, I'm not perfect at it, but I've boiled it down to three different things that I continue to try to stop and ask myself: is this option what I feel is right for the business? Is it going to add value to the business, or is it going to take away value from the business? If it adds value, okay, check. That's the first one. The second one is this decision acting in a loving way towards my stakeholders and my users? If it doesn't, then I need to potentially optimize and try to figure that out. And then the last one is, does this option make me a doormat? Because I don't want to be that. We can't go that far. We can still be kind and compassionate individuals, but also be direct, intelligent, and insightful and resourceful. So,
and I mean, speaking in a similar role, it's a challenge. It's a challenge at times juggling those different elements. It's a challenge dealing with senior management at times if they've got something mm-hmm. they want to do, and knowing when to stand up and push back and how hard to push and which things to push back on. I'll echo that.
Yeah.
It's a challenge. And I like your kind of, I like your 3 points on this. This isn't, is it the right thing for the business? Is it right for customers and employees? And if you serve the customer, you're going to be serving everybody in the end of the day. And not just to do things and agree with what's there because someone else is doing it. Like, is this really right? And not that you want to be confrontational every minute of every day, but hopefully the other people are doing the right thing for the business too. And you don't have to be, but good.
Yeah.
I think a good.
You don't want to be devil's advocate just to be devil's advocate. No. Like, we don't need that.
Those people are exhausting. Yes, agreed.
Yes.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's a good, thank you. That's a good answer and a helpful answer to help try and again make some of these business decisions and we all face. I will let you ask what Industry 4.0 question would you like answered? And I'll ask our next guest if you've got one for me.
Yeah. I've got two for them to choose from. One boring one and one fun one.
Okay. So, well, our marketing people will decide which of those goes through. But you may submit too. And we'll see.
Okay. So the more boring one. So given the Inflation Reduction Act, how do you think software vendors in the manufacturing space are going to have to adjust?
The government is here to help. Yes. How does that change?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, on the because I know it's going to impact obviously manufacturers, but there's always the trickle down effect, or trickle up effect, I guess. So, what are software vendors going to have to consider?
Yes, I mean that's a big the amount of buckets of money coming in, and other countries are affected because they follow suit. So this is a global kind of. Is this a global change in how business works and how long do these things last and what plans? Good question. What plans and how do you adapt? What's your fun question?
My fun one. I am a Marvel movie fan. So okay. What would Tony Stark build for manufacturing today?
What's Tony Stark's Industry 4.0 plan? What would Tony Stark build today? Tune in here on the Industry 4.0 podcast for exciting Marvel commentary and analysis. Well, on that note, thank you very much, Emily. It's been a great conversation. And thanks for everyone who's joined us on the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech. Hope you learned something. Hope you had a few laughs along with us. And again, thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Okay, so for everyone, please, if you are interested in hearing more, follow Grantech on LinkedIn to stay up to date with us. Subscribe to the Industry 4.0 podcast with Grantech, which you might already be subscribed to because you heard it. But if you just tried it once, hit the buttons, subscribe. Email us any questions, feedback, or your thoughts on Industry 4.0 to info@grantech.com. And hope you join us again next time. Again, thank you, Emily.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.